Hello and welcome to MedPod, the official CPD podcast for Maiden Early Trust staff by Maiden Early Trust staff. In each episode, we are joined by a member of Trust staff to share their area of expertise, interest or research in the hope that it will inspire our listeners to try out something new in their own practice. I'm Chloe Bateman, Associate Senior Leader at Maiden Early School and a Trust Outreach and Improvement Ambassador, and I will be your host for this first episode of 2024. We hope that everyone in our Trust community and all of our MetPod listeners had a restful and relaxing holiday and have had a pleasant start to the new year. I'm delighted to be here today with John Peck, CEO of Maiden Early Trust, to discuss the role and importance of ethical leadership in changing times. Thank you very much for taking the time to appear on MetPod, John. It's really great to have you here as a guest discussing such a pertinent issue. As we are talking about leadership today, I was wondering if, before we get into the complexities of this topic, you could start just by sharing with us a little bit about your own personal leadership journey.
Thanks, Chloe, and thanks for inviting me on. Personal leadership journey. I think, you know, take it right back to the beginning. I'm not entirely convinced I know which side of the debate I sit around, whether leaders are born or made. But what I do know is, from my experiences growing up, I couldn't help but be in the thick of it. I wanted to be in that position of leadership. So from a very young age, I ended up being captain in various youth sports teams, prefect at school, various committees at university. And I think for me, and I don't know where this came from, because I certainly don't think it came from my parents, but I was of the mindset that you can either be a follower or a leader. And I don't think it was a conscious choice, as far as I can recall. And I think that sort of mentality, that mindset, flowed into my career, firstly in industry and obviously now in the education sector. I think when I look back to the early part of my career, I had an excellent mentor, brilliant mentor, a chap called Mal Duncan. He helped nurture me, gave me opportunities to extend myself and, crucially, actually, the room to make mistakes. And that was really, really important. And what I learned from him was that no one is immune from the odd drop ball. But what the most important thing was is being prepared to own, accept and to rectify and learn from those mistakes. Mistakes are natural. Everyone makes them. And I think, you know, working with Mal, and that was where I developed my interest for people development and developing teams and, you know, looking back on his approach. And, you know, as I've moved through my career, taking what I've learned, my own experiences, and using those to help others. You know, critically, though, it's about wanting to help and develop people, even though sometimes they didn't really know they needed it. They might need some gentle persuasion. But, you know, in my career so far, I've been really privileged to lead teams, departments, sectors, and now an organisation. You know, and with that, the challenge is always the same. You know, the key to it is surrounding yourself with brilliant people who know more than you. Give them the room to develop, to learn, to make mistakes, but never compromise on your own values and principles when it comes to decision making. And sometimes that can be the really hard part.
Yeah, I'm sure. And thanks, John. I think we'll be picking up on lots of those themes later in the podcast. So look forward to exploring them further. I think it's probably fair to say that over the last 13 years, the landscape of educational leadership has been transformed as dramatically as the landscape of education itself. If we go back in time to 2010, the then Secretary of State for Education, Michael Gove, announced one of the biggest reforms in education policy to date by allowing all schools to convert to academy status. This drive did build on previous changes that have been introduced by the Conservative Education Secretary Kenneth Baker and the Academies programme by Tony Blair that had successively weakened local authority power over educational institutions. Fast forward to today, 54.4% of all children in education attend an academy, with a particular trend for this within the secondary sector. So in 2023, 80.4% of all secondary schools exist as academies or free schools, and this accounts for 80.2% of all secondary school age children. Multi-academy trusts, so not-for-profit companies that manage at least two schools, have emerged in this devolved landscape. There has been 1,170 of these operating within England at the time of recording, and that includes quite a diversity within that category. So there are 29 MATs that have 26 plus schools under their governance, but the vast majority of these, 598 to be very precise, lead five or fewer schools. So So this is a trend that I think it's fair to say is set only to continue. So the government published the Opportunity for All Education white paper in March 2022, which proposed a fully trust-led system designed to, quote, drive up standards through the growth of strong trusts and the establishment of new ones, end quote, setting a target date of 2030 for all schools to be part of or in the process of joining a MAT. So these changes have impacted not only on the way in which education is organised and realised, but also on the way in which it is led. So in many cases, this has led to significant changes to what we might call the traditional educational leadership model of having a single school with governors, a head teacher, a senior leadership team and a staff body that is ultimately answerable to the local authority. It's kind of obvious, I think, that such changes are here to stay. And it is in this context of changing times in education that ethical leadership is more important than ever. And John, obviously, as CEO of Maynelli Trust, you are in a great position to share your insights into how the nature and face of educational leadership has changed over this period and how your own core principles of ethical leadership are helping the Trust navigate the current and upcoming challenges and opportunities. So there's loads of theory out there on leadership, educational leadership, ethical leadership, but I'm really interested in how you personally would define ethical leadership yourself.
Cool, that's a really difficult question, because I think you could line 10 people up and they would all give you a slightly different definition. I think, you know, there is a framework for ethical leadership and ethical decision making that has its roots, you know, back to the times of Aristotle and you know, more recently Jeremy Bentham. But for me, when I think about, you know, look in the mirror and say, how do I lead, you know, in an ethical manner? For me, it's about creating an environment and a culture where innate behaviour and therefore decision making is viewed through the lens of sort of how can I add or create the most societal value out of this situation? What are my options to benefit the widest cohort of our community, even if it causes me or someone I care about a little bit of discomfort or pain? You know, I think sometimes that is, you know, it's kind of framed as, you know, making a decision for the greater good. Yeah. It is like that. But I think it's about, you know, maximising the positivity, the positive impact of making decisions and through your leadership. But I think then when you start to scratch the surface of that, it raises the question of how we define community. You know, you can define it right down to an individual level or a family. You can scale it up to a workplace, a town, ethnic group, country. And I guess on whose behalf are we making decisions, and how do we sense check whether our proposed course of action is right or wrong? And, you know, I guess here's the question, right or wrong by whose standards? And I think, you know, I've given this a lot of thought, and it was certainly a key part of the MBA I did few years ago in educational management. And I think the conclusion I came to was that to lead ethically by everybody's standards is impossible, because, you know, there will always be an element of the community, however you define that, that is negatively or, you know, adversely impacted in some way. And, you know, I was having this conversation with a colleague during the MBA. And, you know, the example I gave was, you know, well, football managers do it all the time. And, you know, there was a time where, you know, I was absolutely adamant Jack Grealish needed to start for England. You know, he, in my view, he's the best player. But Gareth Southgate was having none of it. He stuck to his principles. He put the team first in his own view and his vision. And of course, you know, back at the Euros, we very nearly should have won it. So who's right? You know, Gareth or me? You know, leave that to our listeners to decide. But I think fundamentally, you know, leaders are human beings who are each forged by their own experiences, their emotions, their preconceptions, and also their biases. And I guess, you know, with context layered over the top, ethical leadership remains largely a philosophical debate. I think the question will always remain, ethical leadership by whose standards?
Yeah, definitely. So with that all being said, how do you see this within the context of education at the moment? We've spoken about that kind of changed landscape that we're seeing and how that's very different than in terms of the leadership structures and what leadership actually does within schools. So how does that work in your mind at the moment, do you think?
I think ethical leadership has evolved over the last sort of 5, 6, 7 years, I think, you know, no one can deny that top-heavy trust structures that emerged in the early stages of map development got it completely wrong. And that's, a failure of governance. It's a lack of ethical leadership right at the centre of some of those organisations, which is pretty unforgivable. But I think what it's born from is that, you know, the education historically has worked in relative isolation. Schools sort of view themselves as silos, you know, define their own community as the staff, the children, the families who attend a particular school at a particular time, you know, maybe include the local area around, you know, what was the hub, which was probably the school building. And that was their definition of community. I think with the emergence of trusts, you know, multi-academy trusts, the definition of communities had to become broader. And by definition, that makes ethical leadership even more challenging. You know, going back to, you know, it's about, you know, ethical leadership by whose standards.
And yeah.
One community's view might be different from another. I think what we do is we have to now be far more mindful of the potential consequences on other groups of decisions that we take that we might perceive to benefit our own organisation, whether that's at school level or trust level, regionally, or even at national level. Because, as I said, there was always going to be a part of the community that either doesn't agree or is negatively impacted. And I mean, a really good example of this is us opening River Academy. You know, we know there are enough applications to fill 12 forms of entry, but what would this do to other schools in the local area if we said, yes, actually, we're going to look after ourselves, we'll fill up our school? You know, that's wholly unethical for a whole host of reasons. Which is why we've worked in partnership with colleagues across the local area to ensure fairness in our admissions policy. I think, you know, ethical leadership for me is about choosing to be inclusive and collaborative, to share resources, to share expertise that benefit as wide a range of children and young people as possible, even though it might create some problems that leaders, you know, who, you know, pay fairly well, might have to scratch their heads to solve. And I think this is the challenge that leaders are grappling with. I mean, we're grappling with it in our own trust, and I know speaking with peers in different trusts that they're grappling with that challenge too. And I think, you know, ultimately it's driven primarily by an accountability system that just doesn't reward professional generosity and ethical decision making, you know, by its true definition. I think ultimately for me, it comes down to how we ourselves choose to define our community. I said that earlier. You know, do we choose to limit our field of view purely to what we know, what we can control, what we can readily define, you know, what we can see, what we can touch? Or do we, you know, elevate our gaze and step up and recognise the role that we can play more broadly? And I think for me, this is the space I want to be in. And it's why I do the job I do. And I want our organisation to be operating in that space as well, doing positive things because they're just the right thing to do, without worrying about who benefits the most. And I think, you know, ultimately, that's the view I take of myself. Have I made a decision that is right? Is it just the right thing to do? And if I can sleep at night, then I know I've made the right call.
Yeah. I think that's such an important point, because it is always a choice about how we define community, and it's always a choice about whether to be inclusive and collaborative with others or not. And something I've been thinking about a lot recently is about how trust staff can support that wider vision. So what kind of ways do you think would be, you know, good avenues for people if they want to start doing that a bit more than what they've done before?
I think, you know, the benefit of our organisation is we're growing in the local area. And what that does do is it creates a wealth of opportunity for colleagues who are prepared to elevate their gaze and look beyond their own, you know, sort of traditional roles, to really step up and step out into that space. And, you know, we're a broad church. We have primary schools, we have secondary schools, we've got special schools. And actually for those colleagues who are really interested in developing themselves outwards as well as upwards, it's good for them. We can facilitate that journey for them, and they can learn something along the way and actually contribute to our wider community. You know, and I'll give an example. If we've got a challenge in one of our schools, but what we've got is real quality and expertise in another. Why would I not rightfully expect the quality and expertise in one school to help augment and support another? Because, ultimately, and I say this to my leadership team, is we're not winning unless we're all winning.
Yeah.
And I don't want to see, one school flourish while another flounders. Mm. That's not why we do what we do. And I think also, and this is why I was so keen that we invested in developing the Maiden Early Institute, which is not only our vehicle for internal professional development and growth, initial teacher training, what have you. It plays a really important wider system leadership role. And a big piece of the work we do is supporting schools that are outside our trust. Yeah. It is about, defining our community and sort of growing the sea of that it's beyond our own borders, it's beyond our own control. But actually, if we've got, a school leadership team or a leader or a department that are seeking our support because we do something really, really well, why wouldn't we go and share that knowledge and expertise? And I would really encourage staff to elevate their gaze and give it a go.
Yeah, definitely. And echo that as well in terms of with Maiden Early Institute. There's lots of opportunities for people with like school-to-school support. Even doing, sorry for the self-promotion, a MetPod episode as well is a great way to get knowledge out there to other people who may or may not be within the school that you're currently working in. I think I just want to say a big thank you really, John, because I think what comes through really clearly is just how kind of holistic and global the vision that you have for what we're doing here is. And I think that's definitely something that is clear through how the trust operates. So thank you for taking the time to prepare for the episode today and for appearing as a guest. I hope everyone at home has enjoyed listening as much as we've enjoyed recording today. And we will see you next month for the next episode. Thank you, everyone.
My pleasure. Thanks very much.